163.5 points.
Nice.
Not bad for going into the weekend. This is the fifth record close in a row, and it's a new record for the S&P as well.
With markets closing out another blockbuster week, and we're seeing the sixth consecutive weekly win for the Dow and the S&P.
That means we are 748 points away from 24,000.
We haven't seen a period like this since the early 90s. Obviously, there's a lot of people looking at this number as like, it can't go on forever.
And look, some of the stocks have acted well, and some haven't. You know, sometimes chickens, sometimes feathers.
We can go up for the wrong reasons. Just because we're going up doesn't mean it's right. But at some point in time, for things to get healthy, we do need to have a healthy pullback.
Yeah, the tough part is that these all-time highs tend to cluster. So 50 new all-time highs this year alone. And the worry is, well, one of those is going to be the all-time high where we see a drawdown.
You take the escalator up and you take the elevator down.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Another week for the record books in the stock market. Economic numbers continue to point towards manufacturing having a great quarter ahead. That and much more coming. Hi, everybody. I'm John Loeffler. Welcome to the Financial Sense News Hour. I'm in for Jim Poplava, who is speaking at his investment strategy conference this weekend. And you know, we have a packed show today for everybody who's wondering just how long this crazy bull market can run. In the first segment, Ari Wald is head of technical analysis at Oppenheimer & Company. He's examining the strength of the uptrends in this market. We'll have the normal wrap-up report from Ryan Poplava, CEO of Financial Sense Wealth Management. And in part two of this week's program, Chris Senyek of Wolf Research will present the case for a cautious approach to investing. And finally, in the last part of the program, during the big picture, we're passing through a series of different milestones, and they're all converging trends. This presidency, the presidency of Donald Trump, is different in terms of the economic environment in which he finds himself. We've hit both peaks and lows in the interest rates in the last 40 years, and we see a developing bubble in passive index funds and substantial risk because the bulk of most monetary instruments are concentrated in the hands of just a few institutions. All of that coming up today right here on the Financial Sense News Hour. And the first thing we do every week here on the program is go for a wrap-up report from Ryan Poplava, CEO of Financial Sense Wealth Management. You know, you guys just changed your name and sent out an announcement this week. I got it in my inbox, so I know that you did it. So why don't you tell us a bit about the change and any other changes that might be coming up soon, Ryan?
You're right, John. We will be changing the name of our two companies. Poplava Financial Services, which is our registered investment advisor, will be changing to Financial Sense Advisors. And then our broker-dealer, which we run trades through and clear through NFS, is Poplava Securities. That will change to Financial Sense Securities. So collectively, Financial Sense Wealth Management. The whole idea, John, is to just better align ourselves with our brand. And that brand is Financial Sense. It's what our clients, financial professionals, and the general public have come to know us from. It's not necessarily our investment name. And I can go to an investment conference or a compliance conference, and I'll mention PFS Group to an attendee, and I'll get nothing. Just blank stares. But if I mention Financial Sense, there's a 50% chance they've heard our podcast or read one of our articles. And so PFS Group, you know, that could be anything, a plumber, construction company, group of doctors, you get the point. But, you know, Financial Sense has come essentially from our love of the markets, from our client's newsletter back in the 90s to a radio show on our website. Financial Sense has grown. And it means something. It's not just a website. It's not just a name. It means applying common sense to the markets. And I'd like to own that for our investment firm, as well as because that's just how we manage money.
Has anything else changed for the company?
No, and you know, when name changes happen, typically it's, you know, possibly a merger or anything of that nature. But no, we're still the same company. We still operate the same way. Still owned by our founder, Jim Poplava. The only change is that we're growing, and we've added three more advisors this year and registered reps. And because we're growing, we can offer our clients more services, and that's honestly that's just a big win for them.
So it would seem. Anyway, as you said, it makes a lot of sense, financial sense, as a matter of fact. So, Ryan, let's get down to it. Economic numbers. What can you tell us about this week's market? What were the drivers that led to the continued rally, again, to record highs?
said it. It's essentially been the economic numbers this week. They continue to point towards not just a turnaround in manufacturing, but a real lift. And we've seen that post all the hurricane damage that's affected manufacturing earlier in August and September. Looking at October, this week we got our first numbers. So we got the Empire Manufacturing and the Philadelphia Fed surveys both jumped. Empire survey was at 30.2 versus 24.4 last month, and the Philly Fed survey came in at 27.9, up from 23.8. So really big numbers, and those are essentially these monthly surveys we get are our first line of data for the month to get an idea of what activity is looking like for October. And definitely, you know, manufacturing right now is upbeat. And then we got industrial production looking backwards at last month in September. That showed that the recovery is on, up to 0.3% from a revised number back in August, which was down 0.7%, again, due to those hurricanes. But the other numbers that were significant this week were the housing starts and permits. They were down in September, but again, anytime we're looking at some weakness right now, if we dig down and look at the underlying numbers within each of these surveys or hard data, we get to see that in here in this report on housing, a lot of the weakness was in the South, obviously due to hurricane damage. So existing home sales were actually up, but the underlying theme there has been, and that will probably continue to be, that there is overall weakness in sales because there isn't a lot of supply right now. And again, high prices and with limited supply currently, and that tends to dampen sales. The other numbers this week, initial jobless claims were down, and that's continuing to point towards a strong labor market that luckily hasn't put too much pressure on wages yet. So the stock market has had a nice week on that, on the economic numbers, and on earnings. Things have been very good this week.
Yep, strong numbers this week. Now, on Thursday, what happened that triggered the really decent drop in futures? And then also, what happened to claw the S&P 500's way back to positive?
Good question. And there were a lot of angst early that morning based on a lot of rumors, a lot of news about Catalonia and Madrid's move to implement what was called Article 155 or 55, I forget which essentially they were suspending home rule there. And that kind of got things going on the de-risking side. Also, the governor of the People's Bank of China had made some comments about too much excess optimism and basically the need to kind of curtail some of that optimism, and that the Bank of China might be moving in the direction to possibly do more restrictive moves to rein that in. And then the other thing was Apple. There was an article overseas that basically painted a picture that the iPhone 8 sales have been cut in half, or the potential builds that they're planning for orders were down by 50%. Apple, of course, didn't comment on that, on rumors and news. They're not going to do that. We're just going to have to hear from Apple at the end of this quarter, or maybe hear some reports as they start releasing that product. And then finally, John, just what also was attributed to the weakness or maybe created some selling pressure on the selling pressure was the 30th anniversary of Black Monday in 1987 when the Dow Jones crashed, something like 22%. Traders have been antsy. You know, the market's had a very nice run. Eventually, when these things happen and the market gets overbought, traders do look for excuses to sell, and then selling begets selling. And that's essentially what happened. We did crawl on the way back because buyers did step in on that weakness, as most everything else that we've been seeing fundamentally on the economic side of things and on earnings side have been positive.
Now, how about earnings recap for the week? There have been some major names, and I think next week's probably going to be even busier, as a matter of fact. So far, what's the consensus?
Well, so far, only about 18% of the S&P 500 companies have reported. I typically really look at just the S&P 500 companies to get a real consensus for how things are going. That's the large cap companies. That's a lot of the multinationals. But essentially, what we've seen there so far, looking at sales, about three quarters of them have beat on estimates. and about 82% have beat on earnings. So it's off to a really good start. Typically, in years past, we've looked at typically earnings, there are beats. A lot of companies sandbag their earnings estimates and guidances, and we do get these surprises. But it's a lot harder to guesstimate where your sales are going to be. A company has a lot less control over the sales besides, you know, obviously marketing. So in the past, we've seen sales be around the 50% beating and surprising. So at three quarters, that's a pretty good number. Looking specifically at the different sectors, financials have had a really good report card so far. We've heard from quite a few of the large names. Notwithstanding, I think Wells Fargo was the weakness last week, but this week I think Goldman Sachs and a few others had good reports. All in all, the financial sector was weak after the earnings have come out. They've surprised, but that's because they've had such a nice run over the past month and a half. Besides financials, industrials have had a nice announcement so far as well. Looking at next week, it's going to be jam-packed at the end of Thursday's trading. There's going to be a lot of big names. Microsoft, Intel, and a few others on the tech side are going to be announcing after the market closes. And then Friday morning, we're going to get Exxon and Chevron. So some really big names next week, and it is going to be just a flurry of activity for the next 2 weeks with a lot of companies announcing. But Friday morning, I think definitely you got to look at how things are trading, because we'll get a reaction to a lot of earnings on Friday morning.
Now, I know it's highly unlikely, but anything I missed? Anything else you'd like to highlight?
Let's see, economics, earnings, those are the major ones right now, news stories. The big move up this week in stocks, especially Friday, I think was a direct result of the Senate passing a budget for 2018, which comes only a couple of weeks after the House has put something together and they've put a proposal. So now both Republican houses have put a tax budget proposal together. I believe some tax cuts are being made within that, so that can free them up towards the tax cuts they're going to be making on the tax reform bills in the very near future. So now both houses have put these bills together. Now we need to reconcile. But essentially, it's just a giant step toward, like I said, that tax reform. And really, for the first time, shows the Republican Party in unison aiming towards one goal. So if they can pass the budget the two houses can agree on, then they won't need any Democratic votes. They can do a simple majority, and that's really looked on favorably by the markets. And you can see that in the Treasuries. Treasury yields were higher, and that also helped financials recover from some of the profit-taking earlier on this week on earnings. And then the strength in yields and in progress on reform has led to strength in the dollar. That's about all I have this week, John. It's been interesting with earnings. Economics have been, of course, pretty solid on manufacturing side. We're getting a glimpse on October. But I did also, here I look at my notes, I forgot to mention the Nikkei has had its 14th consecutive positive close. And I haven't done enough research to see what kind of record, if that is, but it's tremendous. And that also really just speaks volumes on the strength that we're seeing in stocks globally, not just in the U.S., because globally the trend is up. And looking at that strength in the Nikkei, that's just phenomenal. Two straight weeks, 14 consecutive positive closes. That's phenomenal.
Yep. So globally the trend is up. And of course, as we said, next week will be a big earnings week, and hope to see you back again. Thanks, Ryan Poplava, CEO of Financial Sense Wealth Management.
Thanks, John. We'll see you next week.
You're listening to the Financial Sense News Hour at financialsense.com. To speak to Jim Poplava or his financial planning team, call us toll-free at 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. We'd be glad to help you plan your customized investment portfolio.
You know, Financial Sense News Hour listeners should remember that our premium members are able to hear the weekday Financial Sense News Hour featuring interviews with top economic commentators and experts. If you're not a member, here's one of the interviews you missed this week.
So over the next couple of months, we're really in this sort of final posturing and positioning by the United States to try to assert itself. On the North Korean side, the North Koreans have made it very clear that there is no space for negotiations that are dependent upon a rollback of the nuclear and missile program. And they intend to complete this program sometime in the next 18 to 24 months. On the U.S. side, they've made it very clear, particularly to the Chinese, that they cannot accept the North Koreans completing this program and having a demonstrated capability of striking the U.S. mainland with a nuclear weapon. Now, there's many who would argue that traditional deterrence will prevent the North Koreans from ever using that weapon, that they know that that would lead to their destruction and therefore they wouldn't ever utilize the weapon. But I think the greater fear from the United States may be not that deterrence fails, but that the failure to stop the North Koreans from developing this system starts to unravel the U.S. alliance and partnership structure around the world, and that leads to a greater strategic weakening for the United States. In other words, the South Koreans lose faith in the United States as someone who can protect them and secure them. The North Koreans maybe start taking truly provocative action towards South Korea, shelling islands again, sinking boats, maybe re-carrying out infiltration exercises, just to demonstrate that the United States is not willing to risk U.S. cities to protect South Korean strategic interests or national interests. And so that starts to unravel the perception that the U.S. really does protect its allies or its partners, and that unravels U.S. security in other parts of the world. I think that's the deeper fear for the United States than the more acute concern of a probably a highly unlikely North Korean nuclear strike on the United States.
Well, it's beginning to look like a runaway stock market. Every single week, we report to you the stock market is hitting new records. Joining us on the program is Ari Wald. And Ari, it just seems like since the election, this thing has just been, it's like a series of steps. You have a big run-up, consolidation for a little bit, another run-up, and then it's been doing this almost a year now. So let's talk about this trend. Is there anything stopping this, or could we get a melt-up into the end of the year?
Yeah, Jim, what you just defined right there is the most basic definition of an uptrend, and that's what we think continues for the market. And overall, looking at how the market is behaving, we see behavior consistent with the middle innings of a healthy advance, not the late innings. And we therefore recommend our clients investing as such. You know, specifically, we want to be overweight equities, specifically stocks that tend to outperform in a rising market environment, those with more pro-cyclical attributes. So in aggregate, overall, the summary is that there's no contrarian call to make here. We've had a nice run, but your typical signals of a market top are not there. And we think this bull market continues.
Yeah, because, I mean, there was a period of time, Ari, where you looked at some of the small cap stocks in the Russell 2000, which were not doing as well, and it looked like we were getting a divergence, but it looks like everything's kicking on all cylinders. If you look at small caps, mid caps, large caps, international stocks, it's really hard to find any area of the world or the markets that aren't doing well.
That's a great point, Jim. It's tough to find that cautionary red flag that would suggest that there's problems brewing somewhere in the world or domestically too. And that was a key point that we were making even during the spring and summer months when there was some consolidation underneath the surface, that it wasn't a sign that participation was narrowing. Instead, what we've seen are these very healthy rotations where areas of the market are taking turns leading at different times, but there really hasn't been a very notable breakdown in overall internal breadth. And now, following that year of internal consolidation, we're seeing participation just start to broaden as some of these areas that had lag are breaking out to the upside, like small caps, like the S&P high beta index as well. It's not just tech anymore. If you look at some of the most cyclical stocks in the S&P, those with the highest beta, we think that is a terrific proxy for the reflationary trade that had a great post-election move in the fourth quarter of last year. And there's an ETF that tracks this. It's ticker SPHB. And after that terrific fourth quarter of last year, this group of stocks have really done nothing, or they did nothing over the next 9 months. You know, year to date, into coming into October, this reflationary sector of stocks have moved sideways. It was characteristic of your typical time correction, where they didn't drop in price as far as moving lower, but they moved sideways. The moving averages have caught up the price, and now this group of stocks are just starting to break higher to the upside. Tough to make the case that we're at a market top when these cyclical stocks are just starting to get going this year.
Yeah, usually in the fourth quarter, we see something like a reflation trade. And there was a question whether we were going to see that this year. But, you know, I'm looking right now, Ari, at some of the things that normally do well in a reflation trade, like the commodities. You do have oil that appears like it's in an uptrend. You still have gold from the beginning of the year that looks like it's in an uptrend. Could we see things like gold, oil, commodities accelerate?
I would key more on the rate-sensitive areas, like banks and the financials in general, rather than the commodity-exposed areas. And in summary, our four favorite sectors are technology, industrials, healthcare, and financials. And I think here the key beneficiary of the reflationary movement, I think what you're going to see, less so on the commodity side, more so on the interest rate side, I think you're going to see interest rates continue to move higher. And I think that's going to be very good for the financial sector and some of the banks and brokers in particular. I think that's the way to play it. And very interesting, even more recently, rates have turned down by a very marginal degree. They've been a little bit soft, but you've seen the banks and brokers continue to rally. To us, that's an indication that the strong players are very reluctant to sell those shares, even though there's some macro signal that would suggest that they should be, that there's a positive correlation there. Usually when you see rates tick lower, banks sell off. You're not seeing that. Instead, you're seeing this positive reaction to negative news. And we think that's the market telling us something, that these stocks are in position to continue to rally into year end.
You know, it's interesting you're talking about the financials, because at the beginning of the year, the Fed had just raised interest rates, in fact, almost back to back. And there was a strong feeling that, of course, rising interest rates would benefit the financials. That didn't happen. We saw interest rates come down in a downward trend. I'm speaking about 10-year notes. And the financials did not do well. It seems like there's more confidence that this trade is going to work out, that the yield curve will steepen, which means bank profits will increase. Do you think that's what these stocks are telling us right now?
That's our take on it. Again, the positive reaction to what is typically negative news, I think that does suggest the action of these stocks are telling us that these areas of the market continue to do well. And I think the interest rate market is telling us that the downturn that we saw is over as well. There was very meaningful behavior coming into that September period on the 10-year U.S. Treasury yield, where we broke below an important level at 2.12%. That was the summertime low. And then we quickly reversed back above it. To us, we view that as a sign of downside exhaustion in interest rates, where those that were bullish on bond prices and expecting yields to move lower, they got trapped below that level, and they didn't have enough conviction to continue to push yields lower. Instead, you saw a quick reversal in that trade as the bond bears, those that were playing for lower bond prices and higher yields, came back. I think that's marking a floor in interest rates. There's still resistance to get through. We don't think it's going to be a straight line higher, but at least over the near term, into year end, we think you can continue to see a backup in interest rates, which should be beneficial to the financial sector.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm just thinking, Ari, if the Fed is going to raise interest rates, which looks like a very high degree of probability in December, and they also continue on with taper, they're reducing their balance sheet $10 billion a month. In January, that increases to $20 billion a month. Then in April, that increases to $30 billion a month. You're basically removing a large buyer from the market in many ways.
That's correct. And what you're really seeing in the short end of the yield curve already respond. The two-year Treasury yield actually already out to a nine-year high. Its highest level, you have to go back to November of 2008. So I think that continues, where you do get a continued rise at the short end of the yield curve while the Fed hikes interest rates and continue to tighten their policy, while the long end of the yield curve should remain anchored by zero to near zero rates everywhere else in the world, specifically in Europe and Asia. Now, we've just made the case for continued flattening in the yield curve. However, I think stocks can continue to do well in that environment. In fact, what we found historically, the more reliable recessionary indicator is not a flattening in the yield curve, but in an inverted yield curve. It's been an inverted yield curve where the short end is higher than the long end. That's preceded every economic recession over the last 40 years, the double dip in the early 1980s, the 1990 recession, 2001 and 2008. So yes, the Fed is tightening, but I think you still want to overweight the fact that rates are coming from such a low level that you still don't have an inversion in the yield curve. And in fact, the level and the direction of the yield curve, where it stands now, looks very similar to how it looked in 2005 and the mid-1990s as well. You have to remember, that late 1990s period, that bull market from 2004 to 2007, all occurred with a flattening yield curve. So we don't think, yes, we have a flattening yield curve. Yes, we think it continues. We think equities can continue to do well in that environment.
Let me ask you this. With this current trend that began with the election, and there's strong talk now that by the end of the year, or at least at the first of the year, that we are going to get some form of tax relief, especially on the corporate side, whether they bring it down to 20% or 15%, and they also allow these companies to repatriate a lot of their overseas profits at a low tax rate, that would be positive for corporate earnings. Is this, in many ways, maybe what the market is telling us now? And if this does happen, could we have another run-up next year? Or do you think at some point these rate hikes will have a bite when it comes to the market and the economy?
These rate hikes should ultimately derail the cycle. We think it's too early to make that call. Typically, bull markets don't die of old age. They die when the Fed tightens to the point where the curve inverts, and we're not there yet. So we say don't lead the leading indicator. As it stands now, it looks like this advance can continue, because along with that below average recession risk, given the lack of inversion in the yield curve, you have very strong technical indicators right here. You have broad-based internal breadth. You have the New York Stock Exchange advanced decline line coming off new highs, confirming the action in the market. Credit spreads continue to narrow, signaling that credit remains healthy. There's a lack of stress. What we're seeing in the spread, for instance, between corporate triple Bs and the 10-year Treasury, again, typically ahead of a downturn, you're going to see those spreads widen first. We haven't seen that. And there's really no culprit sector either. What we found that since 1990, ahead of every major market downturn, not only does internal breadth narrow, but it's usually caused by a particular area of the market. In fact, there's usually at least one S&P 500 sector already down 20% into that final market high. And right now, we don't have that. Right now, the worst performing sector is about flat for the year. That's energy. And we think that is a key positive. Getting back to our outlook on commodities and energy, I think the most positive thing we can say here is that we're not bearish. We think a weak dollar is a significant difference from what we're seeing now and the commodity collapse in that 2014-2015 period when the dollar was surging. We think that weak dollar is providing a floor for commodities. We think it's providing a floor for equities. We think it's providing a floor for the stock market overall. But we also think there's a ceiling out there for commodity prices, that we think we're in this secular non-bull market, essentially a very large trading range. And historically, that's how commodities have traded for years at a time. If you look back at the 1950s into the 1960s, as well as the 1980s and 1990s, those periods characterized by trading range environments for commodity prices, also secular strength for equities as a whole. In fact, that 1980s, 1990s period, crude oil traded between $15 and $25 throughout that multi-decade period. So we think we're at a similar point where commodities are flat. You want to be exposed to equities, less so equities exposed to commodity prices like the energy sector. We think range-bound energy sector underperforms a rising equity market elsewhere.
One thing that really strikes me about this, and maybe it goes back to where we began, because you've heard this before, Ari, the old rule, three steps and a stumble, three rate hikes by the Fed and the market gets in trouble. But those rules apply to a time when, you know, the Fed funds rate used to be as high as 5% and 6%. And when the Fed would lower rates, they would be lower down to maybe 3%. Now, that has changed in the last decade. Greenspan brought rates down to 1%. Bernanke ended up bringing them down to 0. So even though the Fed has raised rates maybe 5 times now, we're still, what are we, 1.25%? I mean, it's not very high.
That's right. We're overweighting the fact that how low interest rates are coming from. Yes, we're tightening, but we're seeing tightening from a very low level. And if you look back at those prior periods, three steps and a stumble that have historically marked your top, you also had a big surge in economic momentum as well. Typically, there's a boom before the bust. And right now, we think it's difficult to make the case that we've seen that boom just yet. In fact, one terrific recessionary indicator is when you get a spike in the price of oil. There's usually a very big move in oil, which we haven't seen yet. So again, it gets back to this point. It's tough to make the call for the economic bust when we haven't seen the economic boom yet.
You know, you just pointed out the typical things you see towards an end. You see widening credit spreads. We saw some of that in the beginning of 2016 when credit spreads between double Bs and treasuries just kind of blew out, a steepening yield curve, and those kind of things that you typically see, or you see a rollover in the PMIs. They start to weaken. Instead, we've got 3% economic growth in the second quarter. Some say we could see that for the third quarter, depending on how these hurricane numbers have affected the economy. So none of that is out there. So I guess the question to you, what would you be looking at? Because right now, this reminds me of, as we started this conversation, the runaway stock market, just like Grisham's book, The Runaway Jury. What would stop this? Would it have to be interest rates at a certain level? A financial institution gets into trouble. If there was danger lurking out there, where would you be looking for it, and what would it be?
It's tough to know exactly what it is ahead of it occurring, but the one thing that is common is that usually the market sniffs it out. That in one of our indicators, you'll see some signs of stress, whether it is the inversion in the yield curve, whether it is widening credit spreads, whether it is that culprit sector, or whether you see participation start to narrow. And right now, we don't have that. You know, as mentioned, the New York Stock Exchange advanced decline line, hitting new highs with the market. Historically, that indicator is going to peak ahead of the S&P 500. In fact, it usually peaks up to 6 months ahead of the S&P 500. Another example, the percentage of stocks on the New York Stock Exchange trading above their 200-day moving average, essentially the stocks in an uptrend. The common characteristic at a market top is you'll maybe make a new price highs, but there's fewer than 60% of stocks in an uptrend. There's fewer stocks participating. There's a particular area breaking down. Again, we don't have that right now. The latest reading's closer to 65%. Instead, we have these very healthy rotations. We have the leadership shifting around of the market, but the overall breadth is strong. We have this not too hot, not too cold environment where you have sideways interest rates, sideways commodities, sideways currencies, and that's intermarket stability is providing a positive environment for equities to continue to rise, we think.
So at the moment, we've got interest rates rising, but no concern. We have bond spreads between, let's say, junk bonds and treasuries narrowing. But if there's anything you expect to see going forward, you expect to see higher interest rates, let's say, on treasuries, but you do expect higher stock prices. Your four favorite areas are tech, industrials, financials, and healthcare. And your advice to investors right now, Ari, would be what? Stay invested?
Stay the course. Yes, that it's important to have a process here and follow your model. Our model would suggest that this is still a healthy bull market. You want to be invested. Use 2 to 3% pullbacks to your advantage. I think it's too difficult to time those 2 to 3% market pullbacks. But we think if you do get them, those are your opportunities to add to those positions. So yes, we've become a little bit near-term overbought. We don't think that's a reason to sell. We think it's a reason to stay invested. And if you do get a pullback, you want to buy more. Our general themes here, it's a little bit of both growth and value. The one common theme, though, it's risk over risk off. I think it's very telling that consumer staples and economically counter-cyclical group with defensive and bond-like characteristics have broken down to multi-year relative lows versus the overall market. This is a sign of healthy risk appetite. What you'll see at the top is more interest in those defensive vehicles. We're not seeing that. I think growth sectors like tech are a terrific idea for the long term. If we're in a secular multi-year advance, you know, forgetting about the cyclical ebbs and flows within that, we think tech is a prime candidate to lead the markets for the years to come, as much as they've run over the near term. It's been a very broad-based move. It's not just the FANG stocks. It's mid-cap tech. It's small-cap tech. It's global tech. It's emerging market stocks with tech exposure. So it's really become a global phenomenon in the tech sector. It's an area of the market that has been resilient to oscillating interest rates. Yes, we favor higher rates over the near term, but we do think there's some overhead resistance. What we found is tech has really been able to show all weather leadership. It's been able to outperform both when rates are rising and falling, while I think an area like financials need those higher rates. So I think tech for the long run is still an attractive bet.
So stay the course. This market has much to go. I mean, it's very hard when I don't care if you're looking at the S&P, the NASDAQ, or the Dow, or any of the major indexes. It looks like a runaway stock market. It's been that way since November 8th. Well, Ari, listen, if our listeners would like to follow you, tell them how they could do so, please.
Jim, they could follow me on Twitter at Ari.Wald. And I think the final point, I think what you hit on there, Jim, is the fear of heights that investors have. And we're trying to help our clients conquer those fear of heights.
Coming up next here on the Financial Sense NewsHour, Chris Sheridan interviews Chris Senyak of Wolf Research, presenting the case for a cautious approach to investing. And then in part three of the program, Jim Poplava discusses the principal merging trends in which we find ourselves in a very different investing environment. All of that as the Financial Sense NewsHour continues at financialsense.com.